It's Ian Ryan hosting the big match on the Anfield Wrap. It's a series of shows where we look at key games from that 2001 campaign to celebrate the 20-year anniversary. In this episode, I'll be looking at Charlton with Andy Heaton, Cathy Long and Carl Kopach. In part two, you'll hear me in conversation with Robbie Fowler. But before all that, we are going to talk about Charlton, but I think it's worth just touching on the UEFA Cup final, Andy, because they are linked, because the Charlton game comes very, very quickly after that UEFA Cup final. And I just want to get people's thoughts, really, on how you were all feeling, because that felt absolutely huge back in 2001.
I think it's absolutely fucking crackers that you play in a European final before the end of a domestic season. I think it's mental. And God knows what that does for the players, because it's not just the UEFA Cup, it's the third trophy. And they've not really been able to celebrate any of it, which is mad in itself. I mean, yeah, I think the FA Cup was, yeah. Because the FA Cup final, then it was Dortmund, then it was Charlton, wasn't it?
And, it was mad. When you think about it now, I was trying to figure out how the hell that happened. I just remember not going home for a week because we went down to Cardiff. And then I think went to London, then flew to Dortmund, and then came back to the Charlton game.
Yeah, we did the same. I didn't go home in between Cardiff and Dortmund, but yeah, the players looked, I think you could tell that on the pitch, because they looked goosed, let's be honest. They started the game and they looked knackered. And also, as well, from an adrenaline point of view, you've just won a big European final. They're only human, do you know what I mean? And as much as, you know, you can say it's all about conditioning, which it was nowhere near what it is now that back then. It must have been such a slog for them, especially given, I think they completed every domestic fixture that year, didn't they? So it must have been so exhausting. And also, if I remember correctly, and you'll know more than me, I think they only used about 16, 17, 18 players all season. Generally, they didn't have this big, mad squad. So yeah, it was just a really strange week going into it.
Cathy, it felt like the club had put themselves back on the European map. Again, it's a term that we use quite often, and we'll have used it a few times across these shows as well. But it did feel like Liverpool, after being in the European wilderness a little bit, it did feel like we were back in the big time on the back of that win against Alaves.
Totally, totally. It was so important, you know. And it seems weird now when I look back and see Julier getting criticism and stuff, because when you look back to how it felt at the time, this was us getting back. This was us for the first time, like with a European manager, you know, doing European things, winning a European Cup, and in such a completely bonkers way as well, with that silver goal and all the rest of it in extra time. And it felt so important that, you know, having won those other cups, which was amazing, but it felt like this was so big. But I think what's weird, especially with having the Charlton game a few days later, is that I'm the first to say it's about trophies and not about whether you finished second, third or fourth or whatever. And it's worth remembering that actually in the Roy Evans era, you had to finish in the top two to be in the Champions League. You know, so there's plenty of times when Roy Evans's team would have done better, actually, you know, would have been in Europe. But as a fan, it's so, your place, and if whether you get into Europe or not, certainly whether you get in the Champions League, completely impacts the next season, doesn't it? You know, in a way that a trophy actually doesn't, you know what I mean? It completely seems to set the agenda for what you're going to do next season, who you're going to play, who you're going to keep, who you're going to buy. You know, there's so much riding on those games like there was this season.
But it was almost as if, Cathy, I think it's possible, it was almost like we had four cup finals and not three.
Yeah.
The way it all panned out.
I remember looking at the staff, actually. I think I saw Bryce Morrison, you know, who was the club secretary then at Cardiff. And he just looked grey. I mean, all of the staff looked ill. And when you think about it, no club actually staffs up and plans to play every single minute of every that you can possibly play in every season, because they'd all have twice as many people as they have, you know. So the staff were knackered. God knows what it was like for the players.
The really weird scenario about the fact that we go to win a trophy and then the next game means that we don't have to play in the same trophy that we've just won and we all celebrate it.
Yeah.
It's a really weird thing to do.
Yeah, strange.
Very strange. Thank God we've all won the UEFA Cup. Now let's not bother with that. It's just a really weird situation to be.
And we'd had such a great season in that UEFA Cup as well. You know, we played some really big teams and some huge games. And I remember thinking, like, what I'd loved about that is every one of those games you thought, we're going to go away for this game because it could be our last one. You know, when it was genuinely a cup competition, it was like, this could be our only game in Europe now. We're going to get beat by Barca. We're going to get beat by Rome, whatever it is. And you go to them all thinking it's the last chance. So, you know, there's no group games at that stage.
And then knowing you lose against Wickham Wanderers.
Yeah.
Past that one as well. Okay. And then we're playing the best Arsenal side in the last 25 years or something.
Yeah.
Beat them. And then, yeah, it just kept going, didn't it? Sorry.
Yeah. It was a crazy week.
I want to pick up on that a little bit, Carl, because I think what everyone said there, people have just thrown out a couple of different teams in terms of names and stuff. And, you know, it's get past another one. You rightly talk about getting past Arsenal, who are a great side, and they come through that. Before we go into that Charlton game, I just remember thinking, what an unbelievable job not only the manager's done, but the team, just to get us to this point where they've played 60-odd games. It might have even been 60 by this point, and they've put themselves through the ringer time and time again. But there's no drop-off in terms of desire. This team wanted to go again and secure that Champions League qualification.
Yeah, and it's absolutely nuts that, you know, it's not just the 63rd game. It's not just the fact that, you know, it's game after game after game. We had to contend with off the pitch things as well, like George Burley saying, "No, I'm not moving my game because just to give Liverpool an advantage," and things like that. So, you know, this was just going on all the time, and God knows how they did it. I was writing for a fanzine at the time. And I wrote that I literally had no idea how the lads made it down the tunnel to get onto the pitch at Charlton, because will and initiative is one thing, but short legs are going all over the place, surely, at that point as well. And they can't drink, they can't celebrate, there's no closure. It's just like, you know, well done, you've won that, have you? It's like Ronnie Brand, get up and do it again. And I thought Charlton, you know, I've just seen they finished ninth. So, you know, they're a decent side. Still did it.
Did Marcus Papel play like every minute of every league game that season?
Pretty much, I think, yeah.
I'm pretty sure that Vesterveld and Marcus Papel played like every minute, certainly of the league game.
Vesterveld had the most appearances that season.
Yeah.
It's funny you mentioned George Burley there. Didn't he weirdly win manager of the season that year as well?
Yeah.
He did, didn't he?
We won the treble, and he did really well with Ipswich, so of course, let's give it straight to him.
And that then, was
the,
very
next,
strange,
then, then the next season, he got relegated at Anfield, which was lovely.
To Charlton then. Cathy, I believe you were there that day.
I was there that day, yeah.
What was it like from an atmosphere point of view? Just talk us through a little bit about how people were feeling, because we've had those three trophy wins, and I'm guessing the crowd are buzzing, because as you mentioned before, putting pots in the cabinet's a big thing, and for me it always will be a big thing. But getting Champions League qualification as part of the journey for this Liverpool team under Julio, it felt like it was another massive step that they had to take. How did it feel on the ground?
It felt like it was such a massive game, and it's weird, you know, we were looking back on that week today and talking about it, and it's strange because there's certain things that are etched in your memory, obviously, from those big games and those finals in that week. But there's massive gaps for me as well. Like, literally, we were like, how did we get to Dortmund again? I think we went via Mönchengladbach. We can't really remember, you know. And then there's certain bits of games that you remember. And I remember going into the ground and just it feeling like that weird mixture of, like, that sort of, I think it was quite warm. It was like quite a sunny day, and it felt sort of quite summery and whatever, and like as though this should be an end of season party, but with this massive tension at the same time. You know, it was maybe because the Charlton fans didn't have so much riding on it, I don't know, but the atmosphere felt really, really strange, but really, really tense for me, because it mattered so much, because I felt like we could have done all of this stuff and then not got into the Champions League, which was so important. And I think none of us just knew really what to expect. Even though we'd been doing well, I remember feeling really, like, not convinced by this game at all. Because I think Leeds had to... It was between us and Leeds, wasn't it? And if Leeds won, you know, and we'd only drawn or whatever, I can't remember. But, yeah, it felt strange. And it was, like, celebratory, but you couldn't celebrate. You know, you'd all just got back from Dortmund and everyone was knackered. I think everyone had just been drinking all week, you know?
The overriding factor, really, or the overriding thought for me in that first half was that Charlton were excellent, and they were all over Liverpool.
They were all over us.
They were kind of cutting us open. It felt like at will. I'm sure it wasn't quite as bad as that, but it did feel like they were very much on top.
It felt to me like we got battered in the first half, and I don't know how accurate that is, but that was my recollection, and just feeling really, really sick.
No, absolutely. Andy, one of the kind of standouts in that particular half was Sander Vesterveld, and he much maligned Vesterveld, to be honest, because he didn't he didn't kind of do it for everyone, and he was much discussed kind of, you know, that season, other seasons as well, in terms of his performance. But he does keep Liverpool kind of in the game that first half. How did you see him in terms of his performance, his contribution that season?
It's a weird one, isn't it? Because if you look back at it now, he made some pretty big contributions. I think So even before the Charlton game, and I think he had his best half in the Liverpool shirt in that match. But I think his fate was already sealed, to be honest. Because maybe we then signed two keepers on the same day shortly after. But he also pulled us up the fire in the League Cup final, if you remember rightly. So Robbie Fowler scores a worldie past Ian Bennett, and then they had a similar chance to go and looping over his head, that he somehow does like a Grobbelaar-esque, flies backwards, goes up blinds and tips it over the bar. So his career's not as potted as what maybe we thought of originally in there. But I think he was his own best enemy sometimes, because he was outspoken. I think when he arrived, he talked himself up a little bit, and then, you know, you had the whole ice on the ball thing as well. Christian Cannonbow's only goal for Middlesbrough, I believe. Instead of just keeping his head down and getting on with it. But no, he definitely kept us in it that day, because Charlton could have been 3 or 4 up at half time. And, you know, I think that by the fact that we were that poor and still in at half time was probably the motivation to come out second half and put in the shift that they did. Because if you're Charlton going in at half time and the score's level, you're scratching your head. You just don't know. And he set the scene for what was to come. So, yeah, brilliant. And, you know, it's I think we can look back on his Liverpool career and he can himself in a much fairer light than what maybe, you know, might have retrospectively been looked at in the immediate aftermath of him leaving. Sorry for going around the hours with that, Ian. But it was 3 or 4 really top class saves, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was looking back at the highlights, and he hit the bar and hit the post twice, I think. And Vesterveld just kept saving them as well.
Yeah, and he more than plays his part. Someone else who plays their part in that match was Robbie Fowler. Here's me talking to God.
And I'm delighted to be joined by Liverpool legend Robbie Fowler for a chat about the 2001 campaign. Robbie, great to have you back on.
Pleasure, pal. How are you, okay?
Yeah, I'm good, mate. I'm good. We're doing a series of shows where we focus on that 2001 season and some of the games that define that season. So I want to get stuck into Charlton Athletic, the last game that secures Champions League football. But before we touch on that, I'm really keen to get you on the UEFA Cup final against mm-hmm. Alaves, because the two are kind of intrinsically linked in terms of momentum. And that season was defined by momentum, I think, because Liverpool ended up winning 9 of the last 10 games. In terms of that final, Liverpool going to secure a third trophy, but it's a European trophy, which hasn't been done for a while. Did that almost give you extra confidence just going into that last game that Liverpool have put themselves back on the map?
You know, probably did, but I think if you go back even a little bit further and you think of the League Cup final at Birmingham, I think that probably instilled that little bit more confidence and that little bit more belief into everyone that what we could achieve. Then you obviously roll back to obviously the FA Cup and obviously the Charlton game. It was such a good season, and I think everyone played a part. And you know, as much as I wasn't maybe the regular, if you like, you know, I still more than played my part. Scored lots of vital goals, you know, in finals, semi-finals, and look, we know in football, momentum is huge. It really is. So when you win that game against Birmingham, then you sort of go on that little bit of run, if you like, afterwards, winning 9 out of the last 10. I mean, it is. It's form like that. It wins your cups and it wins your leagues, and you know, obviously we never won the league, but I think what we achieved that year was, I mean, it was exceptional for a club to go unbeaten in every cup comp, or win every cup, I should say, and then qualify for the Champions League that had eluded us for, you know, for a number of years. I mean, it was just an astonishing season. I mean, you probably had many chats with Carragher as well. Carragher's probably spoke fondly about it. You know, Carragher rolled back, you know, a few years later, where you think of the Champions League in 2005 and what an unbelievable season that was. But I mean, he'll always tell you 2001 was probably it was close to perfection, the season. It was really outstanding and great to be part of it.
I mean, you're right, Carragher speaks so fondly of that season. He absolutely loves it. And you talked there a little bit about you know, you did your part and stuff. I think you more than did your part, as you say. And even in that UEFA Cup final against Alavés, you know, you come on for Heskey on 64 minutes, but you end up playing nearly an hour.
Yeah.
Is the only kind of maybe slight regret is that wonderful fourth goal with your right foot, which is a brilliant goal, by the way, doesn't end up being the winner because Jordi Cruyff pops up with a late equaliser.
You know what? I'm glad you said, because I think that typifies my career, in all fairness. I'm probably that nearly player, if you like, because, I mean, I always think back to, I go think back to 96 with England in the European Championships, where I came on against Spain to take the fifth penalty. Never got to do it. So I never got the chance to be the hero. 2001, you know, getting the, you know, the fourth goal, if you like, against Alavés, hoping that it turns out to be the winner, because, you know, everyone wants to be, you know, that player who scores a winning goal, and not just in a cup final, but in a game. You know, it's brilliant scoring goals, but to be scoring winning goals is brilliant, but to be scoring winning goals in cup finals is what we all dream about as kids, and I want to do that, and I wanted to achieve that because of certainly the season I had, where I hadn't been as a regular player, if you like, or those regular appearances. So you want to do that, then you think of 2005 against Chelsea in this semi-final. I was down to take the fifth penalty. Coming off in my last game against Charlton at Anfield, and then the club getting a penalty straight away. So I've probably always been that nearly player, if you like. And of course I would have loved to, you know, score the winner, but let's put that aside and just say how happy we were, because it was just a fabulous occasion to be had. I mean, even talk about the FA Cup final that year as well. I mean, I came on when we were, and I'm not saying it's a Robbie Fowler final by any means, but I came on when it was when we were 1-0 down as well. So, you know, I did play my part, scored, you know, what turned out to be the winner in the semi, the winning goal, not the winning goal, but the goal in the final against Birmingham, the goal against Alavés. So, more than happy with the contribution I made that year.
I don't think any Liverpool fans call him Robbie Fowler an early player, by the way. I think you're playing yourself down there just a little bit. In terms of that, those three trophy wins then, Robbie, because there's the Charlton game on the horizon, and because obviously it is a pressurised environment, are you able to kind of enjoy it at the time? Or do you look back and think, I didn't really appreciate and enjoy what we were actually doing then?
I don't think we did enjoy it as much as what we should have done, because obviously the amount of games and the games are coming thick and fast. You think of certainly the last week where you win the FA Cup on the, you know, midweek, you win the European Cup, and then the following weekend you play in Charlton. Now, we knew how important that game was, so obviously winning the two cups was brilliant. I know probably Didier Mann has come out and said, yeah, we went out, but I can't remember going out after the game in Dortmund. I really can't, and I'm not just obviously making that up. But then, you roll on to the Charlton game. Now, what I do remember about the Charlton game was it was a game that we needed to win, because I think Leeds had a relatively, no disrespect to Ipswich, but a relatively easy home game. And if they won and we didn't win, then they would have qualified for Champions League. So I think we realised the importance and the significance of, obviously, of our season, but we also realised the importance of the significance of getting into the Champions League for what it meant to the club. And I don't remember celebrating what you'd assume a celebration of a cup final would be like. Then obviously the Charlton game, you know, first half, I mean, you probably all remember the game. I think we were awful. They probably had a few chances. Sander Vesterveld made a few good saves, but the second half, I mean, what a performance we put in there. You know, obviously me getting the first goal, which probably calmed our nerves down a little bit. And then, you know, for the rest of the game, I thought we were magnificent. Obviously winning the game 4-0, qualifying for the Champions League. And that was just the pinnacle of an unbelievable season.
Well, you talk about that Charlton game, and it's one that you obviously start, and it's a huge game in terms of, you know, the significance of that season. It would have felt like quite the blow if they just missed out in Champions League football. You start that match, you're actually with Michael Owen up top. Just keen to get you on how you felt that worked as a partnership, because I think, you know, often maybe it might be Heskey and yourself, or Heskey and Michael Owen. Did you feel it kind of brought the best out of you two playing as a partnership, or would you have preferred to have gone with maybe the big man in Emil Heskey?
You know what, I wasn't bothered who I played with. I mean, I was confident of playing with anyone. Now, I think all throughout my career, I think people always assume, oh, you know, you're a goal scorer, you're this, but I'd like to think I could play outside the box as well. So Good players can play, I think, in any position. Good players can play with anyone. So people always had this little thing about, you know, yourself and Michael can't play. You know, good players can play with anyone. Mm-hmm. So I was never fazed or worried or focused about, you know, what I can and can't do in terms of who I'll play with. I mean, I was just always confident in what I could do. So, I mean, I'm not talking about Michael, might have a different opinion. You know, he'll probably say, you know, he enjoyed playing with Emileski because obviously the, you know, he probably scored his most goals, you know, certainly playing with Emil. So, you know, and I can't argue with that. But for me, I wasn't interested in playing with. I just wanted to play. Now, if you were playing up front for Liverpool, I would have liked to play up front with you as well.
I'd have taken that, to be fair. I mean, in terms of that first goal, I mean, you kind of glossed over it a little bit there, but I want to touch on it because that first goal, talk about adapting to the moment, talk about improvisation. It's a hell of a finish. And you don't see many finishes like that where you've, it's kind of, it'll get described as an overhead kick, but you've kind of hooked it over the back of your head. It's some finish.
It's my favourite ever goal, in all honesty. Now, when you say, you've just said yourself, when you talk about like an overhead kick, you know, people automatically think of Pelé and Escape to Victory. Now, obviously, you'll have younger listeners who probably haven't got a clue what Pelé's goal in Escape to Victory was, but I think you just Google that and find out what it was like. But for me, it was because it was a measured finish. And I think the simple fact it was a good goal. I think it calmed everyone down. It put everyone a little bit at ease. And, you know, I've spoke before about the importance and the significance of it. And for me, that's what it was all about. So regardless of being a good goal or not, it doesn't really matter. It's my favourite goal because obviously what it meant for myself, what it meant for the team, what it meant for, you know, all the, you know, the unbelievable supporters that we have. And I mean, it is, honestly, I can't say any more than that. It is my favourite goal. And I've been lucky to score some great goals. You know, shots outside the box. I'm not interested in scoring outside the box. You know, my bread and butter is maybe scoring tap-ins, and I probably got more enjoyment out of scoring tap-ins because that meant I was doing my job, and that was meant I was in the right place where I should be. I think everyone can maybe score goals from outside the box every now and again, but I think with the Charlton one, it was just like a measured, just a measured shot, if you like. With you know, I knew where the keeper was, I knew the ball where it was, I knew the defenders were about me, so that was probably the only thing I could do. You know, I don't remember anyone being on the edge of the box for me to pass to, but as soon as the ball sort of went over my head and I knew where the keeper was, I knew there was a space available in the goal, and to sort of engineer that and put it in the back of the net was brilliant.
You get two that day, so you obviously get the third as well. So it's two important goals because the first one puts Liverpool on the way, and the third one, our third one, just kind of kills hope from a Charlton point of view. But you talked there about different types of goals, and one of the things that's always impressed me, and I was going to match when you were breaking onto the scene and stuff. If someone was to say to me, describe a Robbie Fowler goal, I think it's quite difficult because what do you want the left foot, do you want the right footers, do you want the headers, do you want the free kicks? There's lots out there. If someone said to me, describe an Alan Shearer goal, for instance, yes, he scores lots of different types, but I think there's almost a kind of type of Alan Shearer goal. You had an array of goals, didn't you, in your locker? Were you conscious of that you could score pretty much any type of goal?
Well, I mean, I worked at my game, so, you know, it's this was always my battle throughout my career was, oh, you're a natural goal scorer. Now, for me, it was a case of, you might look natural because the amount of practicing and, you know, I'd done was, like, the monotony of doing things over and over again was something that I enjoyed. Now, it's not for everyone, but I was doing all different types of finishing, you know, practicing with my right foot from a young age, you know, for my size, I'm 5'9", and, you know, scored lots of headers. Movement was good. I mean, I sound like the best player in the world, you know. but I mean, I have actually heard that before, actually, where people don't really understand what my type of goal was. And I mean, I suppose it's a huge, huge compliment and one that I'm rightly proud of, because I did score lots of goals and I did score, you know, a different array of goals. But I worked at my game, you know, I worked at different aspects of, you know, shooting and certain parts of your foot, different areas of the pitch, different areas of the goal area. And yeah, it's just a case of, look, you know, let's work hard, and, you know, and when these situations fall into place in games, then it probably looks a little bit more natural than what it should do because of the monotony of doing things over and over again.
Robert, you mentioned that in that, in terms of that Charlton game, that they put Liverpool under a severe amount of pressure. I think they hit the post and Sander Vesterveld's making a number of saves and stuff, but it almost felt like that Liverpool team was built to be able to withstand pressure, and then the forward players would take a game away from someone because of the threat that we had. Do you also think it's a little bit underappreciated just how good that team was? Because I look at someone like Leicester this season. I know you can't necessarily compare Liverpool to Leicester, but they win a trophy and they almost power down and think, well, we've done our job now. Where that Liverpool team, it was just absolutely hungry for success, wasn't it? The desire to keep going and keep going and keep going where you're playing over 60 games.
I think you've just hit the nail on the head. It was desire. So look, you know, every player should have desire anyway. But we had that in abundance. We had obviously the experience. We had obviously the, you know, the real good players as well, who could change games. So we always knew that if we were ever behind, or we knew we had the arsenal, if you like, to, you know, to go out there and still compete in games and still do what we needed to. So. Yeah, it is just one of them things. I'm not sure whether we ever were underrated, in all honesty, because of what we achieved and what we done. But I mean, people can never take that away. You know what we achieved, and I know you people might make comparisons with whatever team anyway. But it doesn't matter. You know, I think in the grand scheme of things, when we think of what we achieved at that particular time, then I mean it's been unrivaled for, you know, silly for. When we think of Liverpool, this sounds stupid, but when we think of Liverpool as a club, obviously we've won trophies, you know, year after year and different type of trophies, but, you know, we've never really done that before. Obviously winning the three cups and then qualifying for the Champions League. So, you know, it was a real, real great experience and a great real sense of, you know, this can be achieved because obviously we worked at it. And, you know, without sounding like an idiot here as well, you know, the sound to the manager as well. You know, the manager was good. You know, we had fallings out, but, you know, I'm one of them. If you're not playing me, then I'm going to fall out with anyone. You know, I wanted to play all the time, but I think he was, Gerard Houllier was instrumental in a lot of the good we've done that year as well.
Absolutely. Robbie Fowler, that's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much.
Cheers, pal. Thank you.
And I'm back in the virtual room with Andy, Cathy and Carl. And Carl, I want to have a little chat about the second half, because it's fair to say Liverpool run absolutely riot in that second 45. And it's all started by what can only be described as brilliant improvisation from Robbie Fowler. It's some finish for the first goal.
It's bearing in mind that he's just done probably one of his best, scored one of his best ever goals midweek as well. And back to the goal. And it's one of those things I always think about is, like, you know, how do you even think about doing that? Because surely what you do, you're holding the ball up, you wait for an on-run and, Redknapp's a bad example, but usually would have been Redknapp if Redknapp had been playing. Someone's come out and thought, no, I'm just going to dink this over like five lads, one of which is on the line, and I know it's going to go in. And that's the level he was at. And I was so happy about that goal, because pretty much immediately after the FA Cup final, all the papers were saying, Fowler's off, he's going, he's definitely going, he's 100% going, nailed on, he's gone. And then, you know, he scores such a big goal in Dortmund, and then and scores the goal, which basically just starts the route, really. And you know, you think is he getting slower? Is he not quite? Obviously, he's had so many injuries. He just pulls two goals out at the end of the season like that, and just think he's going to play for us forever, or for about the next 5 months, as it turns out.
Cathy, there's some fantastic goals. All four are worthy of mention, and something I did touch on with Robbie was that relationship with him and Michael Owen in this game. They both start. You know, we were quite used to seeing Heskey being a focal point, and then maybe one of the smaller guys playing alongside them. But it is Fowler and it is Owen in this one. How did you see that as a partnership? Did it work for you in terms of what Liverpool were trying to do?
Yeah, it did work. You know, I people used to think that we had to choose between the two, and I didn't always think we did. I think there were times when it really worked brilliantly, and I thought that game sort of showed both of them in their madness and their brilliance, you know. Robbie with such a cheeky goal. I mean, it was ridiculous what he did. It was absolutely, it was a bonkers way to try and score a goal. You know,
it's a playground, isn't it?
I remember looking back a few years back when we were talking about Steven Gerrard, you know, when against West Ham in that cup final, when he scores that worldie at the end to keep us in it, and then says, like, well, I was too knackered to do anything else. You know, I just had to lash it because I couldn't run anymore. And you sort of wonder whether with Robbie it was a case of, well, I've just got to try this. And that, to me, was classic Robbie. And I remember him. I'm sure he laughed when he scored the goal, and we all did. Like, it was one of the weirdest celebrations because everyone just fell about in hysterics because it was classic cheeky foul. And then when you look at Owen's goal as well, the way that he runs onto the ball, that's classic Owen as well. And to me, it just showed both of them what was so fantastic about having both of them in the side, you know. And both of them putting balls in for each other, actually.
It was the weirdest overhead kick, even so much as I wouldn't even describe it as an overhead kick, because he was almost sat on his ass when he hit it.
Yeah.
It was just I just remember everyone laughing.
Yeah, because if you think of like overhead kick, you're thinking of this like a piece of couch type bicycle kick where they absolutely leather it. But he kind of just finessed it. It was the weirdest. Yeah. And only someone with such an understanding of the penalty area.
Yeah.
Like proper, I mean, it's a popular phrase, I'm in it for the chest, but he must have had everything mapped out in his head exactly where everyone was. I'm getting considering the mechanics of it. Sat here.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
Andy, I want to stay on the forwards for a minute, and I want to come back to you on it because we've done a few of these shows now, and we've touched on a lot of different players. We touched on the back four. We've talked about the goalkeeper earlier in this show. Steven Gerrard had more than a mention. Emil Heskey for his kind of his selfless play, if you like. And we've talked an awful lot about Robbie, but Michael Owen in 2001 is still a phenomenal footballer. And the games you focused on, maybe they haven't brought out kind of Michael Owen's contribution in a way, but it's fair to say, Cathy talks before about a classic Owen finish, and I know he's left the club in maybe not the greatest of circumstances, but it's fair to say back in 2001, Liverpool had one hell of a footballer on their hands.
I think 2001 was his best season at Liverpool yet. I don't think he ever fully recovered from the hamster when he blamed his hamstring in 1999. But 2001, he completely reinvented his game. I mean, you've only got to look at the goals he scored, not just, I mean, you mentioned Roma was mentioned earlier, and then the FA Cup final, obviously. And again against Charlton, he's just, I always feel almost melancholic about Michael Owen. Because similar to Sander a little bit, in so much as that his reputation's tarnished by what followed on. But let's not forget Liverpool. Everything that Liverpool is now, the foundations were laid in 2001, I think, anyway, because we kind of re-established ourselves, because we hadn't won anything since 1995, unlike another team I could care to mention. But there you go. And Houllier come in, totally revolutionised the club. I mean, no, we moved away from Melwood, but Melwood was in a state of disrepair, needed loads of work doing to it. But even with all that preparation, it's the lads out on the pitch who do that. And as much as we say Steven Gerrard carried the Liverpool side from maybe 2002 to 2000, until he retired, Michael Owen pretty much carried that Liverpool side that season as well, with his individual brilliance. And I don't think he gets anywhere, and I can understand why, to be fair, but I don't think he gets anywhere near the respect he deserves. He was absolutely deadly that season, absolutely deadly. And I think, sorry, just finish off, just to go back to the Rome, I think as a standalone performance, his performance in Rome is one for the ages and doesn't get mentioned enough.
I think it's absolutely fair. Carl, the other person I wanted to touch on, and I want to make sure we give all the kind of squad a bit of due care and attention through this 2001 campaign, and we've tried to do that through all of these shows, but another player we haven't really focused on, and he gets the second today, and again, he's much maligned, is Danny Murphy. And I remember at the time, you know, his contribution was always questioned. You know, there was things he couldn't do, and we didn't have a lot of pace, but there was definitely things he could do. He could find a pass, and he had the ability to find and pick out a sublime finish at times, not to mention his set pieces. He gets the second goal. Where were you with the likes of a Danny Murphy at the time? Because again, it's fair to say he contributes that season.
Hugely. He was, it's his 10th of the season as well, which isn't bad from centre midfield or wherever you're going to play him across the midfield. And it's his breakthrough year. It really is. And even if he's played before that, this was the one where I know there was talk at the time when him and Gerrard were arguing who was going to score the most goals in a season. You can only tell which, you know, with the trajectory those two players went at the same time. But it's the squad was so good. And, you know, if he wasn't playing, it wasn't the end of the world because someone else would, McAllister or someone like that, would come in and play. But I really used to miss him when he wasn't playing just because he was clever. He held onto the ball well. He used space really well. And he liked the shot. And to be honest, this goal, it's a lovely finish, but the keeper doesn't half help him. And Sander's gone down the other end for a minute. And it was just really, really important. And it's quite sad in the way, you know, you think about that side now and you think about, you know, Julio got some abuse and obviously Owen has as well, and Danny Murphy has as well. And it's very hard to sort of marry the two things together about Danny Murphy on Match of the Day and the one who scored three winners at Old Trafford and cost like under £3 million and who won the treble and got us into the Champions League and started all this off. It's very, very difficult sometimes to take, you know, to take those two, it's two different things. But he was a hell of a player. He frustrated the hell out of me later on, I must admit. But in 2001, he was just perfect for that team.
There seems to be a pattern here. Sorry, a pattern here with the three of them, isn't there? You talk about Sander, Michael, and Danny Murphy. But I think it's funny because it's only just come to me then when you mentioned it. I remember him saying that he always set himself a target of 10, didn't he? And him and Steve, and later in his career, would always have a bet who could score the more goals. And I just said he did score some really, really important ones. And it's a try. I always draw a comparison between him and Letizia. Not because they were similar, but for two players who were so intelligent on the pitch, you'd think they'd be articulate off it.
Yeah.
And they're both absolute fucking bomb pots to go off subject for a bit. But I think you're exactly right with Danny Murphy. I think you put it articulated far better than I ever could. That your first thought with Danny Murphy isn't that season again, which is a great shame.
Yeah.
Cathy, I want to just take it to the last 10 minutes because you mentioned before the Michael Owen goal. It comes in the 80th minute. I'm guessing in the away end, it's fucking party time.
Absolutely. Yeah. It was relief. It was joy. And it felt like it was celebrating everything that had happened that week, you know. A thing I remember most, like I said, and I kicked it off with really Robbie's goal, was just laughter. Like, I think everyone was just sort of hysterical by the end of that game, you know? We were right behind the goal. And everyone had been drinking that all week. Everyone had been away from home for a week. We felt like we'd been all over Europe. We'd been to Wales, you know, we'd been to Germany. And we were back in London. And it was absolute party time. It was real bedlam behind the goal. I think even before he scored that goal, and then it was just like, everybody just knew that was it. You know, we were back. I think it's really interesting, actually, when you look at it now as well, to see that like this season, except I think we expected it less this season, you know, but then it was so important to get into the Champions League. And the record has been exactly the same from that season to this season.
And did he get that Champions League qualification, which felt big? You know, you've got the three trophies, you've got the Champions League qualification secure. I'm always keen to get people's thoughts on this season, and I think it's interesting the way you get a different perspective from a Carragher to a Gerrard in terms of how they rate the seasons. Both obviously love it, but, you know, one favours the Champions League season over the three trophies. Where were you in terms of how you saw this season? And even now, looking back, 20 years have passed. Where does it kind of fit in your match-going life of following the Reds?
So I've got a massive amount of affection. It holds a really special place in my life. 2001, because I was only just turned 19 going into that season. So bear in mind, it was the first real time I'd as a man, I'd seen Liverpool be really good, you know, and be able to celebrate it and go get on the away games. I'd only just started doing the aways a year or two before, you know, and just seeing them through your own eyes and, you know, kind of like retreading your mum's and dad's footsteps almost. It's kind of like you grow up and you get all these stories. And it was a kind of an awakening, rather, both on the pitch and off. So I put it, it's weird. Nothing will ever top 2005 for me, but I think I had a more enjoyable 2001, if that makes sense.
Do you know, I actually felt the same. I think that's really interesting. I loved that season. It was just joyous. And you know what you've been saying about like players like Murphy and the others? Well, people forget is we loved these players at the time. Okay, not everybody was the biggest Danny Murphy fan, but there was absolute joy with those players, with that team and what they'd achieved that season.
Carl, final word with you. You've seen a lot of football in your time, a lot of seasons. A lot of them have been successful seasons. How did you see 2001?
Carl, he's calling you an Altswat there, mate. Don't you?
Literally every show, I get this. Gibbo's got about me enjoying the 50s a few weeks ago. I've also seen a lot of bad Liverpool sides. I've also seen so many false dawns. And, you know, the final piece of the jigsaw, Harry Kewell's going to get a win us the league. Paul Ince is going to win us the league. And this one felt like we're seeing Liverpool win things. And now you wait since 1995, then you get three trophies straight after each other. But my bad memory that season, more than anything else, is actually just the backroom staff on the side of the pitch at the final whistle, just all in a huddle, jumping around together. And just thinking, oh, that's for them. That's what they wanted more than anything else. And it's weird that it's not a trophy. It's the next step along. Without 2001, without that Charlton game, there'd be no Istanbul. There'd be no Jurgen Klopp. And, you know, that's the foundation of everything we did started that season. So it's just every single... And it was a slog, but I remember just like thinking, we played last night. Okay, that means we're not playing today, so we play tomorrow now. And I'm being right half the time because we know we were playing. We played every single game we could that season. And it, as I said, it's the foundation for everything, that 4-0.
What a season. What a campaign it was, 2001. That's been the big match. Thank you to Andy, Cathy, Carl. Hope you've all enjoyed it. See you soon.